Welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols. I am joined, in fact, by NBA champ, co-host of All the Smoke, Matt Barnes, as well as former number one overall pick. I mean, let's be honest. Once you're the number one overall pick, you're always the number one overall pick. Chinne Ogumike, co-host of the Chinne and Gold Jr. Radio Show. Coming up, guys, we're going to get into some MVP talk, so stick around for that. Our producer's putting a few names up on the board already. But first, the NBA has felt kind of like a game of cards the past few years. Lots of high-stakes gambling, some teams folding early when trying to collect chips for the future, and others, well, reshuffling the deck every time they get cards that don't come up winners. And there's no one who's been more active at that table than the Houston Rockets. Remember when they tried to beat a Golden State flush with a pair of Harden Pauls, then asked the dealer to hit them with a Westbrook? And when that didn't work, hey, just deal them in for a whole new hand. Of course, there's always a risk when you do that, right? You don't know for sure if what you're getting is going to be better than what you're giving up. But last night, the Rockets at least started getting their cards in order. It was the first time their new backcourt of John Wall and Victor Oladipo were on the floor together. It was also Wall's first game against the Wizards team that spit him into the discard pile just a few months ago. And he did not remotely hide his desire to show them just what they were missing. Wall had 15 points and 4 assists in the first half, including this coast-to-coast behind-the-back beauty. Look at this. So nice. On the other side, Bradley Beal kept doing what Bradley Beal has been doing. He dropped 33 in this game, along with 5 rebounds, 4 assists, enough to keep him as the NBA's leading scorer. And I want to note, there was no animosity last night between Wall and Beal, despite that Beal's ascension was a big part of the Wizards deciding to trade Wall. In fact, Wall and Beal say they still text regularly. The same cannot be said, however, for Wall and Russ, who got into it in the fourth quarter of this game. So what was this all about? Well, let them tell you.
Trash talking. I mean, that's what two competitive guys do. You know what I mean? Russ been kicking my ass for years. You know what I mean? This ain't the first time we've trash talked before.
I don't start talking I defend myself because I don't, you know, allow people just to say anything, especially when I know the facts as it pertains to anybody on the court playing against, you know. So I think they just start talking because they just started winning at that time. So, you know, it's cool though. We play them again.
Apparently, last night in Houston, it was really dark indoors. Everyone needed sunglasses. Anyway, the kerfuffle came in the middle of a Rockets 24-9 run in the fourth quarter. For most of the game, Oladipo and Wall looked like they didn't really quite know what to do with each other yet. But by the final frame, that started to change. Oladipo hits this nice turnaround J, a little more than 7 seconds to go. Whoop! That looks great. Then Wall came back into the game, and the two went to work, combining for 19 points as the Rockets blew the game open. Afterward, Wall did not hold back.
But I just feel like the organization thought I was done. No matter how much hard work I put in over the summer, they came and watched me. They thought I was done, and that's why I came out and did what I did.
Well then, you know what's interesting? In the NBA's big picture, the Wall-Westbrook trade wasn't a game changer. It's not even the biggest trade Houston's made in the past 3 months. But in every trade, the stakes are always high for the players involved. And last night, Wall let Washington know he's still able to be part of a winning hand. So, Matt, we did see things get chippy with Russ and John Wall last night. What did you take away from that exchange between the two of them?
Just competitiveness. These guys are two similar players, traded for each other. Obviously, Russ with all his accolades, John coming off 2 serious injuries, is still trying to prove himself. This is very personal for him. Not only really, I wouldn't even say so much against Russ, more against Washington, because he's given his heart and soul, and he ends up getting traded. So I just thought it was great. Like I said, these guys are two dogs, and they're definitely going to meet up again. But I'm excited to see what this Houston team can do when they have all guys on deck. Obviously, Christian Wood will be back in a few weeks, but I think this team is, you know, going to be right in there fighting in that, 7-10 area to try to get one of those playoff spots at the end of the season.
Come on, Matt. You know, Matt, how this goes. These are two players that want the smoke. I thought you'd go there, obviously. I love the energy, okay, from both of these guys. Now, I know from personal experience, it's hard, you know, switching teams and then playing against your former team. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I got booed every time I touched the ball back in Connecticut. Good thing it's limited fans, so you won't hear those loud boos. Plus, Russell Westbrook and John Wall, as Matt said, are super competitive. And this was a really risky move on both parts. Russ risked a lot leaving OKC, where he was the man to play with James Harden. And John, you know, now he risks a lot, you know, fighting back for his career, fighting for his career, reclaiming his career. And so now, you know, with Russ sort of taking his former spot, and especially after those injuries, I see why John Wall is really ready to step up to every challenge. And now I see why, you know, this energy is actually the best thing that is happening to Houston, because you've got a lot of players with chips on their shoulders. And if Houston is really to survive in this post-James Harden era, you need guys like that, you know, that will get down in the trenches and rebuild it from scratch. And so, like, I saw that exchange and I was like, I like this. This is normal for us to see it from Russ.
I loved it.
Not necessarily the most normal from John Wall, especially, you know, in a Rockets uniform now.
Well, it's interesting, guys. We just put up the terms of that trade. And that trade had been rumored for a little bit. And the question was, well, who would have to send the first round pick to who? Who would have to attach a pick? And look, it's too early, obviously, to make a judgment on who got the better of this deal. But it is interesting when we look at the way things have worked out so far. Very small sample size with the limited number of games both these guys have frankly gotten to play. But I don't know. We will see in the end who we think got the better of this deal. As for the Rockets in general now, they have won three straight. They are starting to get healthy now that the James Harden saga is behind them. Chinee, do you think the Rockets are still a playoff team? They looked deep last night.
Look, Rach, I know it is early, and I did go and check the standings, albeit early, and they're only two games back from the eighth spot, where the Warriors, which, by the way, y'all, the Warriors are at the eighth spot. Like, I don't know if that's good or bad, but it is what it is. But once the Rockets, you know, they get Christian Wood back, who, by the way, thank you, Raphael Stone. That was a great get for the Rockets, a guy that's a most improved candidate. I absolutely think that they can sneak their way into the playoffs. It's not just John Wall that's backing down from no one. It's also, as you mentioned, Victor Oladipo coming back from injury. And remember, in his first game back, he made a statement dropping 32. Boogie, you know, getting back to form finally, you know, nailing those three. Steven Silas getting a fresh start and has them playing defense. And I found this nugget that they're now the third best defensive team after the blockbuster trade. Before the trade, they were 22nd. So now, yeah, obviously it's going to be a harder path. Nice. But the Rockets, if they play hard and they play, you know, like they're taking everything personally, I took that personally Jordan-wise, yeah, they could sneak themselves into the eighth spot.
Yeah, this is a team full of dogs. I love it. I love the fact that, you know, John and Boogie are still getting their footing back. You know, you saw flashes of how great. People forget how good DeMarcus Cousins, hands down, Joel Embiid, nobody was messing with DeMarcus Cousins when he was healthy. So you're starting to see Boogie find his rhythm, find his tone. But the best thing I like about this team is their dogs. Christian Wood gets back. You got P.J. Tucker over there. You got Eric Gordon. I don't think they have very much shooting, so look for them to possibly make a move come trade deadline to maybe add some three-point shooting to this team. But you know one thing they're going to do is they're going to play hard every single night. And like you said, now they're, you know, since the trade, they're third in defensive efficiency. So look for that to continue because these guys play hard, and I love it.
I can't believe we're talking about a Houston Rockets team, Matt, and you're saying, yeah, they don't have much three-point shooting. But that is the truth right now.
Right.
It's just a strange thing to be saying out loud. We will have to see. Certainly a chippy, fun game last night. I want to see more from both of these teams. Hopefully we do, and they can all play without any more of these COVID disruptions. All right, guys. Before we go to break, I want to remember one of our own who we lost to COVID-19 yesterday. NBA TV reporter and analyst Sekou Smith covered the league for more than two decades, starting as a beat writer for the Indianapolis Star covering the Pacers. Then he went on to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution to cover the Hawks before joining Turner Sports in 2009. He'd been a TV analyst, a writer, and a podcast host nationally ever since, touching just about everything and everyone associated with the game. And so when he died, people from all over the NBA community were gutted, including Commissioner Adam Silver, who released this statement that said in part, quote, "The NBA mourns the passing of Sekou Smith, a beloved member of the NBA family. Sekou was one of the most affable and dedicated reporters in the NBA, a terrific friend to so many across the league. Sekou's love of basketball was clear to everyone who knew him, and it always shined through in his work." The Atlanta Hawks added, quote, "The Hawks organization heartbroken by the passing of Sekou Smith. The Hawks beat writer for the AJC from 05 to 09, Sekou provided our fans with honest and fair coverage, sharing incredible insight on the team while establishing himself as one of the NBA's top personalities. Pelicans coach Stan Van Gundy. The NBA community lost a great man today in Sekou Smith. While I've known him since he was at the AJC, I was lucky to work with him at NBA TV. I got to know him well enough to know three things. I was lucky to spend time with him. I wanted to know him better. And he was a good man. Dwayne Wade said, I've never had anything but positive interactions and conversations with Sekou Smith. Our prayers go out to the Smith family. We lost a good one. Rest in heaven. Steve Kerr also chimed in, so did Chris Paul. And many black journalists noted how Sekou served as a mentor and inspiration as they were coming up. And if you read the tributes, you notice a theme. Sekou's kindness, his warmth, his razor-sharp wit. Personally, I can't stop thinking about that just infectious smile he had and his boundless curiosity. So many times I watched him ask just one more question, and of course that's when the real story would often come pouring out. Losing him is so hard, and frankly, I am so angry. I am angry that we as a country have let more people die of this virus than anywhere else in the world. Angry his wife and children have to go on now without him. All of us in the NBA community, all of us at The Jump, we would like to send our heartfelt condolences to Sekou's wife, Heather, their three children, Gabriel, Riley, and Cameron. Smith was 48 years old. He will be dearly missed. The Jazz trailed by as many as 15 points, but ended up winning the game by a comfortable 14-point margin. Ended up being Utah's ninth straight win, the longest active win streak in the league, and the longest by any team this season. Now, after playing 34 minutes last night, this morning, Donovan Mitchell started showing symptoms linking him to a possible concussion. So, according to team officials, Mitchell now been placed in the NBA's concussion protocol. He will officially miss tonight's game against the Mavs. But let's go back to the Jazz as a whole, looking at their upcoming schedule. They play the Mavericks twice, then they get the Nuggets. Matt, how long do you think the Jazz can keep rolling, especially with Mitchell's absence at least for tonight?
It's going to be tough without Donovan Mitchell. Obviously, he's their go-to guy, but this is a great team, and I love what they're doing over there. Shout out Quinn Snyder. They're really starting to build a foundation similar to what the San Antonio Spurs have been doing. This is one of the best teams in the league, but I still think they need that piece to get them over the hump, possibly a Bradley Beal or a Zach LaVine at the trade deadline. But I love what Quinn Snyder is doing over there in Utah.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Matt. You know, without Donovan Mitchell, the streak is likely going to end potentially, but still the league should not relax. And, you know, it takes me back to what Coach Steve Kerr said before facing them not too long ago. He gave them the best compliment ever, the Utah Jazz. He said, they look like us not too long ago, 3 or 4 years ago. That is absolutely the highest praise. And when he said it, I started looking into the numbers because they are dominant on both ends of the floor this year. They're the only team that's top five in both offensive and defensive efficiency. They've also, speaking of the Warriors, they're number one overall in total threes made. And they're the only team with six players that average making over two threes a game.
Figures.
So
yep.
A lot of threes, great defense. Mm-hmm. And then you look overall, like this team, they know how to play with one another. They've got veterans. They're getting healthy. And of course, they're led by an elite player in Donovan Mitchell. So yes, I'm a nerd. Yes, I love the numbers. But guess what? Numbers never lie. And in this case, they support the case of the Utah Jazz.
We found a basketball player who loves analytics. I'm going to keep that for Janae, kind of maybe in her bio box or something like that.
Sometimes, sometimes those numbers lie, Janae. Sometimes they lie.
You're right.
Now, that's what I'm more used to. I will say about the Jazz, it's fascinating to me because, of course, the first team to have a COVID positive, and, of course, that was the trigger for the NBA shutting down last spring. There was a lot of talk about what was the relationship like between Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. In fact, Donovan kind of alluded to it in a Good Morning America interview not that far afterward. But the bubble actually really helped this team. It kept them close. What could have been divisions got kind of fixed by the fact that they had to be together all day, all the time, without any family and friends. Donovan and Rudy were playing ping pong together at one point, and I watched these guys inside the bubble get close in a way that they might not have again if the season had picked up in a more traditional, regular way. And I think you can see that closeness right now. It is really, really fun to watch. All right, coming up, as we look ahead to our Saturday primetime matchup, are the Celtics better than they were last season? That is next, right here on The Jump. Welcome back. Chinee and Matt still in the house from their respective houses. We got a lot of houses going on here at The Jump. On Saturday night, friends, the Celtics do get their first crack at the defending champs after coming up just short in the Eastern Conference Finals to the Heat last season. Boston 10-6 this season, tied for second place out east right now. So, Matt, are the Celtics better overall this season than they were last year?
I think they are. I love the addition of Tristan Thompson, someone who's going to pay dividends come playoff time, a proven banger, big body, does the dirty work, because I think they were a little, needed some help there last year. I think the key to this team, obviously with Tatum and Brown being one of the best young duos we've seen in the game, they need consistent play and consistency, and Kemba Walker to be healthy, I feel like, for this team to get over the hump. He's been a little in and out and then had some times of inconsistency. So I think in order for this team to take the next step, which is possibly playing in the finals, they need Kemba Walker to be healthy and playing his best basketball.
Yeah, I agree, Matt. And you know, you say consistency, and I'm going with another synonym, continuity, because once they have that, they will definitely, the Celtics, take that next step. Because if you think about it, they went from having what? Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward and Al Horford to now not having any of those guys. Plus, Kemba, their guy, has been in and out of the lineup, and I'm so glad that he's finally back now because he's been looking great on the perimeter. But now we finally know, and this is for the continuity's sake, we finally know that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, those are your primary options, and the formula is, albeit slow, still working. Jason Tatum, his numbers are like career highs in almost every category, and Jaylen Brown, every year he gets better. He adds another skill, and that's the trajectory that will make them compete. So they still have some things to figure out. Like you said, Tristan Thompson in the paint, providing that rim protection and just easy finishes helps, but it's going to be interesting to see how they evolve, because it will take a little bit more for them to compete against the bigs that the Lakers have, or the Bucks have, and Giannis, or a 76ers team with an Embiid that's looking like an MVP. They're almost there. They are better, but it might take a little bit more fine-tuning for them to actually take down one of those giants as well.
No, that's a great point. It's been one of the questions about the Celtics roster. It's a good point you also make about evolution and Jaylen Brown in specific. Matt, what is it with Jaylen Brown? We all see the numbers. We watch him. But from a basketball player's perspective, when you're down on the court, what are some of the little things that you notice Jaylen Brown doing that's getting better and better, that he's had such a breakout season?
He's just a student of the game. And, you know, Kobe used to say, you know, you add a piece each summer. And It sounds like that's something Jaylen Brown has been doing. He's added, you know, the in-between game. He has a post-up game. Obviously very explosive when he gets to the basket. Starting to become a more consistent three-point shooter. And what I like about him is he plays defense. Mm-hmm. You know, so Jaylen Brown is definitely making waves. And he should definitely be considered if we have an all-star game as an all-star this year, because he's been killing, the time that Jason Tatum was out because of contact tracing. Jaylen Brown has really stepped up. So I'm excited to see the evolution of these guys continuing to play together and really getting, like Janae said, getting their rhythm and their chemistry together, because they have a lot of different talented parts. But once they all come together and get some time together under their belt, that's where we're going to see the best Celtics team.
Yeah, for sure. And Jaylen Brown.
Well, Jaylen is from Georgia, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
You wanted to point that out.
Yeah,
huh?
She had to get that in.
Well, I mean, we're talking about an all-star game that's almost in Atlanta. Come on now. So, like, of course, this would be the time.
I get it. I will say, by the way, even if they don't have the game, they are going to pick all-stars. We will get to that a little bit later in the show. And I just want to make the point about Jaylen is he's obviously someone everyone in the league has had their eye on for years, because he is such a talent, jumps off the court. But I think it's fascinating to see how he has kept adding to his game. And his name has been mentioned in the most improved player category, which, again, there's some voters who just don't like voting for a player that was that accomplished already to then add more. And they like to save that for a younger player. I am someone who likes to use my vote for if someone made a jump, they made a jump, no matter what stage of their career they're in.
Period.
I am interested in seeing how Jaylen Brown continues to make this jump this season. All right, let's talk about the Hawks, because they beat the Clippers 108-99 last night. PG and Kawhi were both out due to COVID protocols. But let's give some love to Atlanta. They've won four of their past five games. During that stretch, we've seen great performances from Trae Young, Clint Capela. Chinee, are the Hawks taking a big step forward this season, or are they still a year away?
Since we talk about Atlanta, it reminds me of, you know, the versus the versus battle, you know, so I say, you know, okay, that was one of my favorites. Anyways, Trae Young, clearly he's a bucket, but he desperately needed some help on the perimeter too. I remember last season, no player outside of Trae on the perimeter averaged more than like double digits, around like 12 points. And so now they have DeAndre Hunter, talking about players that have improved, taking a big step forward. You add in a guy like Danilo Gallinari and Bogdan Bogdanovic, which was a nice little random boost that they got, you know, in the middle of that trade,
yep,
which will help with that. And you know me, I'm gonna go back to my Houston people.
Mm-hmm.
Clint Capela, he anchors the inside. And so the Atlanta Hawks, they're really building something special, and when it comes together, it might take time. I think that they will really compete, led by obviously Trae Young.
Yeah, I think they're still a year away, but they were my surprise team out of the East this year, and I think they're in the sixth slot right now. And one thing that's not overlooked is Rajon Rondo's presence. Although he's been in and out of the lineup, having him on the show, that was the one thing that I asked him is, you know, all these young guys are trying to soak up game from him. So he's over there coaching these guys up, whether he's on the court or not. And you know what time it is when it's playoff time. So look for this team to definitely make some noise this year. I still feel like they're possibly a year away from really, really making noise. But I see them definitely getting a chance to be in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, it's interesting. It'd be interesting, again, how that play-in scenario, the 7 through 10 slot, does that help them? Because that maybe they'll need that help to get in. Does it hurt them? Because maybe they would have been in already, and then some team comes to challenge them. We'll have to see where they end up in the standings at the end of the year. All right, guys. Chinee has to get ready for the Chinee and Golic radio show, because you apparently cannot have a radio show called Chinee and Golic without Chinee. So thank you for joining us today, friend. I'm just saying, coming up, though, Matt's going to stick with us. The Lakers and the Sixers are facing off tonight on ESPN. Out of those teams, who is more likely to win MVP this season, LeBron or Embiid? Brian Windhorst is going to drop by to join me and Matt to discuss. First, though, here's what the Jump recommends for today. Kevin Arnovitz writes about NBA road trips amid the coronavirus pandemic and how it is, quote, a bubble within a bubble, according to Miles Turner from the Pacers. Head over to the app. You can look what it's like for players who are forced to essentially quarantine before and after games. Welcome back to The Jump. Rachel Nichols still here with Matt Barnes. And welcome in to the host of the Hoop Collective podcast, New York Times bestseller, live from the Cobra Dome. Oh, yes, it's Brian Windhorst. Guys, we've got some good games on ESPN tonight, so let's get you ready for those with a new edition of Jump Ball. First up, if we go inside the Sixers-Lakers face-off, who on those teams is more likely to win MVP, LeBron James or Joel Embiid? Embiid, of course, never won the award. LeBron, four-time winner. The Sixers have the best record in the East so far. And according to Caesars' William Hill, James has now moved into having the second-best odds to win, while Embiid is in sixth. So, Brian, who you got of those two? We're just staying within this game right now.
Rachel, let's go back to a conversation LeBron had with you on national television in Orlando.
Yes.
Where I believe he said, give me my damn respect.
That is accurate.
As an MVP voter, I have to say that I don't regret my vote for Giannis last year, because Giannis had one of the greatest all seasons of all time and the Bucks were amazing. But watching LeBron in the bubble, it reinforced the distance between him and everybody else. And with this season the way it is, where it's scattered, where there's a lot of guys going to be playing different levels of games, and because of LeBron, he's worth something more than four MVPs. I don't know if it should be five. I don't know if it should be seven. I think the narrative, which as we know is so important in the MVP race, I think the narrative is on LeBron's side. And I think if he keeps playing this way, it's going to be very compelling for people like me who have not voted for him in recent years for various reasons, even if they were good, even though Joel Embiid is having a spectacular year.
Rach, I need to know, now that I'm part of the media, how do I get my vote?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to hook you up into a conference call with Tim Frank. Yeah. We'll work it out.
I need to get in here. I'm taking LeBron, and as Brian alluded to, he should have at least five, six, seven, maybe eight. And you can say the same thing about Kobe back in the day. He should add more MVPs. I think the league gets caught up sometimes in getting what's new, what's fresh. Obviously, Giannis being MVP, you know, brings a different attention from overseas. But LeBron has been the best player for a long time. He should definitely have more under his belt. But this year, I just love that it seems like he's so at peace with this game. And his team understands what they have to do, lead the league in defensive efficiency, understanding that this is a marathon, not a sprint. So not only are they going to be, is it their title to lose? I also think it's LeBron's MVP to lose as well, because he's definitely, to me, in the front seat and should win it this year.
Well, I would argue that it's not a matter of voters getting caught up with what's new or fresh. It's about the criteria for the award. And poor Brian has had to hear me say this for 5 years now. But, you know, Matt, I have a new audience with you, so I'm just going to go into it just a little bit again. The direction is, who has had the best regular season? And LeBron James at times, and look, last year, as Brian pointed out, Giannis had a historic regular season. And that is what the award has been for. It has not been for who's the best player in the NBA. And the league has played into this by not modernizing and updating its awards the way, frankly, every other major pro U.S. sports league has. They have updated their awards. They have added scoring awards, or they have added awards that recognize the statistical best season being separate from who is the best player. And so that is why we have ended up with LeBron James not winning more MVPs. Before him, Kobe Bryant not winning more MVPs. Frankly, Michael Jordan not winning more MVPs. And I think there has been a bit of a turn among fans and even among some writers, and Brian, I think you're alluding to this a little bit, of just saying, okay, maybe we're just going to start awarding this for who we all know who the best player in the NBA is in any given year. And right now you could make an argument for LeBron. People are making an argument for Kevin Durant resurging. That is different from who has the best statistical season this year. And it will be interesting to me to see how voters vote at the end of this year. Because as you point out, Matt, that disparity between who's the best player in the NBA versus who had the best stats, it seems like in some ways it's only grown since we have more stats.
It's tough for me, you know, as a former player, and this is all due respect to Giannis because he does have great regular seasons, but if you can't go to the MVP in the playoffs when it really counts, when the world is watching, when everything is on the line, how can you consistently continue to win MVP? LeBron is someone you can go to. KD is someone you can go to. Luka is someone you can go to. So I'm not knocking Giannis because his regular seasons have been off the charts, but as a player and guys and how we talk in the locker room, if you can't go to an MVP down the stretch in a playoff game, how is the MVP?
Yep, absolutely. And again, that's with the way the league has set up voting. Voting is done at the end of the regular season. So you can't even make that judgment or have that conversation when you're doing an MVP vote, because it's supposed to be for only the right 6 months that preceded it. Nothing more, nothing less outside of that. And again, I wonder if that is going to change, if the league is going to make a change or if voters are just going to start changing it for them. All right, next up, our next jump ball. Who is the more promising rookie? Number one overall pick, Anthony Edwards, or number two, James Wiseman? Start us off, Matt. What do you think?
I think obviously both have a lot of talent, but I'm going to give the edge to Wiseman because of the organization he's in. Organization means so much to young players, and when he's going into an organization of Golden State who just came off one of the greatest runs in the history, you have guys like Draymond and you hear every day getting a chance to play with Steph, Coach Kerr, and just that organization. I give him the upper hand because Minnesota's been in shambles for a lot of years with ownership, management, coaches in and out, and they're just a losing franchise. So I'm giving the edge to Wiseman, although I love Anthony Edwards and what he's been able to do thus far in this young season.
Yeah, and Andrew Wiggins alluded to it this week. Andrew Wiggins is incredibly close to Ryan Saunders, very close to a lot of people in the Wolves organization, but he just said the way the organizations run are just different, and he's the guy to have an objective view on that. You're asking me who the most promising rookie is. I am blown away by the promise of James Wiseman. I think that his ability to do things at his size, to shoot, he's got great hands, he's got great feet. You know, Edwards is averaging more points, he's not shooting a good percentage. That happens to rookies. I'm not looking at the stats. And Wiseman recently was sent to the bench because of defensive problems. But in terms of pure promise, I am with Matt. I think Wiseman has extraordinary amounts of that he can grow, and I love his skills for a big man.
And your point about the franchise is good. It's not a knock on Minnesota. It's really not. It's talking about just how exceptional Golden State has been culturally for years, and there's ample evidence of it. And Matt, you were inside that organization. And this goes back to draft picks are not the same, just interchangeable by team. When teams trade draft picks, hey, we got a number, we got a number one in this year. It's this protected. Well, it depends on who that team is picking and then how they develop them. And so they can be more or less valuable,
yes,
just depending on which team is holding them. And the development of James Wiseman, right, we know is going to be good because we know what Golden State can do with young players. We've watched Draymond just for one in these two games, right, Matt?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think Golden State struck gold in this situation because normally they're not a team that would be in the lottery, you know. So normally lottery picks are teams that, you know, are struggling.
Sure.
And sometimes those are some of the bottom franchises in the league, and guys don't really have a real good example to see next to them day in, day out. But like I said, Golden State had an offseason last year after running a dynasty run, and now you plug in one of the most talented bigs we've seen in a long time with all the great vets around him, coaching staff and support system for organization. I'm excited to see what James Wiseman develops into in the next handful of years.
Again, the Draymond Green development program is really up and running there in Golden State. You can watch it every time those two are on the court together.
Absolutely.
Coming up, guys, the Nets big three have been logging a lot of minutes since they've came together. Is their workload something to be concerned about long term? We will discuss that. It's crunch time here on The Jump. The Athletic reporting the Pelicans are fielding trade calls involving J.J. Redick and Lonzo Ball. New Orleans holds the second worst record out West right now. Brian, will the Pelicans be sellers before the deadline?
Yes, and not just those two guys. Eric Bledsoe has also been involved in trade talks, and in a lot of cases, it's the Pelicans making the calls. There is interest there to move out some of the veteran guards to make room for Nickeil Alexander-Walker and Kira Lewis, their first-round draft pick, to get those guys some playing time. Pelicans are going to be making some changes, I believe.
It was interesting to see because I thought this was a very coach such as Stan Van Gundy can come in here and gel with these younger players. Obviously, it looks like he can't, so I expect them to also be sellers during the trade deadline.
I'm still getting used to a world where we're talking about veterans getting traded, and Lonzo Ball is in that category. He's a vet now? Are we all old? We're all old. Okay, just checking. Yesterday, we discussed Woj's report that the NBA and Players Union are negotiating the possibility of an All-Star game on March 7th in Atlanta. Brian, I know you were involved in the reporting of this as well. Chris Paul reportedly wants to use the game to provide support to HBCU schools, also COVID-19 relief. Last time the NBA held an All-Star Weekend in Atlanta was in 2003. I was at that weekend, and I can tell you, it was a time, boys. Brian, how realistic is the idea of having an All-Star game amid this pandemic?
Well, it's realistic because the league wants it to happen. And when the league wants something to happen, anything's realistic. And if they have the support of Chris Paul, the head of the Players Union, it's realistic. Whether it should happen, well, this could be a super spreader event where you would bring in all kinds of players from all kinds of teams and then send them back out. That's a different question, but the league is really pushing for this. They've had several conference calls about it this week.
Matt, I want to jump in with you on this because we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but I didn't get a chance to ask you yesterday from a player's perspective. There's only a five-day break this All-Star break this year. So for 5 days, you'd have travel on 2 days at least and the game in the middle. So that's 3 days of your five-day break. If you were one of the stars around the league, would you want to, with the way this season has already been so grueling, would you want, if you were selected, to fly in and spend 3 of your 5 days working, doing this All-Star game, I guess?
It's a lot, you know, obviously with safety being first, but it's such a tremendous honor to be named an All-Star. You know, although some guys like Chris and LeBron are there every year, I look forward to the first-timers, you know, possibly a Jaylen Brown or, you know, some of these younger guys are getting the opportunity. I'd hate for their first opportunity to be named an All-Star. It's just being named and not played. So, you know, we talked about this yesterday with safety being at the forefront of all this stuff, but if the NBA can make it happen, and normally, like Brian said, when they want stuff done, they can make it happen. As long as it's safe, I'm all for an All-Star game because, like I said yesterday, the games of late have been so entertaining and competitive that I would love to see an All-Star game.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any arguing that it would be a bigger risk to take, as Brian says. You're possibly hosting an event where you're taking a bunch of guys from 2 dozen teams and putting them together and then sending them home. And if something happens there, you're sending that virus out to 24 teams. They could get lucky. And it doesn't happen. And I know there would, if they go forward, they would take every precaution to make sure that it doesn't happen. But like with everything, this entire season, every game that is played, every sporting event, everything that goes on in our lives, there is some risk. There will be luck involved. We've had multiple games postponed. We opened the show talking about one of our colleagues, Sekou Smith, who died of coronavirus. And it was a reminder of the high stakes that the league is dealing with, which I know that they are aware of and is going to factor into this decision. All right, time for our League Pass game of the night. There are 12 games on the NBA slate for tonight. So many choices. Our producers, though, had to pick one. They went with Nets versus Hawks. We discussed the Hawks a little earlier in the show, but tonight they get their first look at the new Brooklyn Big Three. I do want to point out, by the way, the Hawks, very classy gesture, are going to have a moment of silence for Sekou Smith before this game. On the Nets side, Harden, KD, and Kyrie are all expected to be in the lineup, and they rank 1, 2, and 3 respectively in minutes per game since trading for Harden. So, Matt, are you worried about them playing this many minutes throughout what is a condensed season?
I think they had knew this was possibly coming. I don't like it for KD because he's coming off such a horrific injury. But they know this is just really kind of shows the lack of depth this team has, is because they have to ride their big three, to me, too much minutes at this point. Although, you know, Harden and Kyrie have, you know, luckily been injury free. Someone who's coming off an Achilles injury should not be playing 40 minutes a night.
You know, they're going to have two or three or maybe even four roster moves left to make. They have a couple of maneuvers they could make in the trade market. I'm not expecting a big-time player, but I don't think you can evaluate their roster and their rotation today. So, yes, they have to play fewer minutes, but also, yes, this isn't their complete team yet. Let's see where they are about March 1st, and that's what you're going to see going forward.
What's the number one thing they're looking for on the trade market, Brian?
A wing player and a big man, and they'll get them. I just don't know if they'll be stars.
You say a big man?
You keep hearing rumors, too. Well, you keep hearing rumors, too, about, you know, Andre Drummond possibly being bought out of Cleveland to go to Brooklyn. And I know that's one of their deficiencies they feel, too, is they need another, you know, someone to protect that front line.
Well, it's going to be interesting. Obviously, one of the most watched teams in the NBA. We'll be watching them against Atlanta tonight. Thank you for joining us today. The Jump back tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern. Have a good day, everyone.